Welcome to another deep dive from Aurora Generators. Today, we're really digging into something that's probably on a lot of minds right now, the new forecast for the 2025 Atlantic hurricane season, and maybe even more importantly, what you actually need to do to get prepared.
Yeah, we've gathered quite a bit for this. We're looking at the extended range forecast that just came out from Colorado State University, CSU, plus some really crucial background on how hurricanes actually form and the danger of storm surge. That's from NOAA and UKRR. And then really practical advice from ready.gov on preparedness.
Okay, so our goal here is pretty straightforward. We want to pull out the most important bits from all that, give you the key numbers from the forecast, maybe unpack the why behind them a little, and definitely focus on the biggest threats, like storm surge, and then get into those actionable steps you should be thinking about. Well, now.
Exactly. It's about understanding the outlook, but then turning that into real preparation. So let's jump in. That CSU forecast, the early April one for 2025. The big headline is they're anticipating above normal activity in the Atlantic Basin.
Above normal. Okay. What does that look like in terms of, you know, actual numbers compared to average?
Right. So they're forecasting 17 named storms. For context, the average based on 1991 to 2020 is 14.4. For hurricanes, the prediction is 9. The average is 7.2. And for the major ones, category 3, 4, or 5, they're forecasting 4. The average there is 3.2. So, yeah, bumps across the board.
More storms, more hurricanes, slightly more major ones. Is there a way to kind of capture the season's total energy, like its overall intensity?
Yeah, definitely. They use a couple of metrics for that. One is accumulated cyclone energy, or ACE.
Yeah.
Basically, it measures the total power output of all the storms combined, how strong they are and how long they last. A higher ACE means a more energetic season overall.
And what's the ACE forecast?
It's a 155. The average is 123, so significantly higher. They also use net tropical cyclone activity, NTC. It's similar, often shown as a percentage of average. Their forecast is 165%, while the average is 135%. Both numbers are telling us, essentially, expect a season with considerably more overall activity than usual.
Got it. That gives a clearer picture than just the storm counts. So why? What are the climate signals pointing towards this more active season, according to CSU?
It really comes down to two main things right now. First is ENSO, the El Niño-La Niña cycle out in the Pacific. We're currently in weak La Niña conditions. La Niña tends to mean less vertical wind shear over the Atlantic. Wind shear, those changing winds with height, can rip storms apart.
So less shear means a more favorable environment for storms to develop and strengthen.
Exactly. Now, they expect this La Niña to probably transition to neutral conditions soon. There's still some uncertainty looking out to summer and fall. But crucially, a strong El Niño, which would increase shear and suppress activity, looks pretty unlikely at this point. So that's one factor.
Okay, so the Pacific isn't expected to put the brakes on things too hard. What's the second factor?
That's the Atlantic itself, specifically sea surface temperatures, or SSTs. CSU notes that the waters across the eastern and central Atlantic are generally warmer than normal right now.
And warm water is basically hurricane fuel.
It's the primary fuel, yeah. Warm water, especially deep warm water in the tropics and subtropics where these things often get started, it provides the heat and moisture storms need. Now, they do note the Atlantic isn't quite as off the charts warm as it was at this exact time last year, but it's still significantly warmer than average. And that warmth is a strong indicator favoring an active season. So you put together potentially lower wind shear and plenty of warm fuel.
And you get the conditions for an above average forecast.
Yeah.
Makes sense. How reliable are these forecasts made so early, though, like in early April?
That's a fair question. CSU is pretty upfront about it. They use a mix of methods, statistical models based on past climate data, combined statistical dynamical models from big global centers, you know, like the European Center, the UK Met Office, Japan, Italy, and they look at analog years, past years with similar climate setups. But they do state that these early April forecasts have what they call modest skill. The accuracy generally improves as we get closer to the peak season, like August and September, when the climate patterns become clearer.
Okay, modest skill, but still based on the best available science right now. So we have the overall season outlook. But what about the really critical part for coastal residents' landfall? What does the forecast say about that risk?
Right, this is key. CSU predicts an above-average probability for major hurricanes making landfall. That's for the continental U.S. coastline and for the Caribbean.
Okay, can you give us those probability numbers?
Sure. For the entire continental U.S. coast, the chance of at least one major hurricane landfall is put at 51%. The long-term average is 43%.
Wow, okay, that's a noticeable jump.
It is. Breaking it down further, for the U.S. East Coast, including all Florida Peninsula, it's 26%. Average is 21%. For the Gulf Coast, so that's Florida Panhandle westward to Texas, it's 33%. Average there is 27%.
33% for the Gulf Coast? That's almost a 1 in 3 chance, significantly higher than average.
It is. And for the Caribbean, specifically the area they define between 1020 degrees N and 8860 degrees Washa, the probability is 56% compared to an average of 47%.
So increased risk pretty much everywhere you look in those areas.
Yes. But then CSU includes this sentence, and honestly, it's probably the most important takeaway from the whole forecast. They say, and I'm quoting loosely here, "As with all hurricane seasons, coastal residents need to remember it only takes one hurricane making landfall to make it an active season for them. Thorough preparations should be made every season, regardless of the forecast."
That really cuts through the numbers, doesn't it? It doesn't matter if it's an average or below average season if your home is the one that gets hit.
Exactly. That single event is what matters to you and your community, which leads us naturally into understanding the threats beyond just the category number.
Right. We hear Cat 1, Cat 3, Cat 5, but there's more to it.
Definitely. NOAA reminds us how they form. You need that warm ocean water, like bathtub warm, at least 26.5 Celsius down to about 50 meters. That's the engine. You need some kind of existing weather disturbance, often a tropical wave off Africa, lots of thunderstorm activity, and importantly, that low wind shear we talked about so the storm can organize vertically.
Warm, moist air rises, releases heat, powers the whole thing.
And then there's the threat that, frankly, often causes the most devastation: storm surge. UCR has great info on this.
The deadliest part of the storm, often. What exactly is it?
It's basically an abnormal rise in sea level generated by the storm above the predicted astronomical tide. It comes ashore with the storm and can cause just massive rapid flooding. UCR explains it's mostly driven by the strong winds, literally pushing the seawater into a mound ahead of the storm. The low pressure at the center contributes a little bit, but it's mainly the wind piling up water.
So stronger storms, stronger winds, bigger surge.
Generally, yes. A Category 4 or 5 will typically produce a much larger and more destructive surge than a Cat 1 or 2, simply because the winds are so much more powerful at pushing that water.
Does the shape of the land matter?
Oh, absolutely. Huge factor. UCR points out that things like bays, estuaries, or coastlines that curve inward can act like funnels. They concentrate the surge, forcing the water level much higher than it might be on an open coast.
Like Tampa Bay, you hear about that vulnerability.
That's a classic example, yeah. The geography there, plus the relatively shallow offshore waters, a shallow slope, allows the surge to build up higher as it moves inland. The angle the storm hits also matters. A direct perpendicular hit usually maximizes surge along that part of the coast.
What about how fast the storm is moving? Does a faster or slower storm make it worse?
It's interesting. It kind of depends. UCIR says faster storms can sometimes cause a higher surge right at the open coast because the water piles up quickly. But slower storms can be worse for bays and estuaries because they just keep pushing water into that confined space for a longer time, allowing it to really build up.
And then there's the tide, combining surge with high tide.
Yes, that's called storm tide. It's the total water level rise of storm surge plus the normal astronomical tide level. If the peak surge arrives right at high tide, well, that's when you get the absolute worst-case flooding scenario, much, much higher water levels.
Okay, so we've got an above-average forecast, higher landfall risk, and these really serious threats like wind and particularly storm surge. It all comes back to what CSU and Ready.gov are saying.
Preparedness. It's not optional, really. Not if you live anywhere that could be affected. The forecast gives us a heads up, but being prepared is what actually protects you. And Ready.gov lays out the steps pretty clearly. Things you should be doing now, not when a storm is churning offshore.
So what's step one? Where do you start?
Stay informed. Seriously, sign up for local emergency alerts, county, city, whatever you have. Pay close attention to local news and weather, especially during hurricane season. A NOAA weather radio is a fantastic tool. It'll alert you directly for watches and warnings and know the difference. A hurricane watch means conditions are possible within 48 hours. That's your cue to finalize preps. A hurricane warning means conditions are expected. That's when you need to take immediate action, maybe evacuate if ordered.
Knowing those terms is critical, and having a plan before you even hear them.
Absolutely vital. You need a family emergency communication plan. How will you contact each other if you get separated? Have an out-of-state contact everyone checks in with. Know your evacuation zone and the routes before you're told to leave. Figure out where you'd go: friends, family, inland, a hotel, a public shelter. The FEMA app can help find shelters. Write it down. Have a go bag packed with essentials in case you need to leave in a hurry. Plan for your pets. Know where you can take them. And little things like keeping your car's gas tank at least half full during the season. Keep important phone numbers written down, not just in your phone.
That communication plan and knowing where to go, that takes time to figure out. Can't do that last minute. What about supplies?
Right. Build your kit now. Don't wait for the rush when a storm is approaching. Aim for at least a 3-day supply of essentials for everyone in your household. Water, a gallon per person per day. Non-perishable food. And really think about what happens if you lose power, because that's extremely likely.
Yeah, a long power outage, that changes everything. No fridge, no lights, no AC, maybe no water if you're on a well.
Exactly. So your kit needs things like flashlights, lots of extra batteries, a battery-powered or hand-crank AM/FM radio, or that NOAA weather radio, again with batteries. Ways to charge your cell phone: portable power banks are crucial for staying connected. Food that doesn't need cooking or refrigeration.
And this is really where having a plan for backup power makes such a huge difference, isn't it?
It really is. If you have a reliable generator, whether it's portable or a standby unit, it can be a complete game changer during an extended outage. You can keep your refrigerator running, save hundreds of dollars worth of food, keep some lights on, maybe a fan or small AC unit. Power essential medical devices. Keep phones charged for communication and information.
It provides a level of, well, resilience and safety, and just basic comfort that's hard to overstate when you're talking days or weeks without power.
Absolutely. So while your basic kit covers survival, backup power helps you live through the outage much more safely and comfortably. Don't forget other essentials in that kit too. Medications have at least a week's supply. A good first aid kit, personal hygiene items, maybe some extra clothing, blankets, cash ATMs won't work without power, and pet food and supplies if you have animals.
Okay, so supplies are key. What about important papers?
Good point. Gather copies of critical documents, insurance policies, IDs, bank records, medical info, property deeds, or leases. Put them in a waterproof container or scan them to a secure cloud service. You'll need these for recovery.
And protecting your actual house.
Yeah, Ready.gov talks about mitigation. Secure loose items, outside furniture, grills, trash cans. They become dangerous projectiles in high winds. Trim trees and shrubs, especially dead or weak branches near the house. Clear your gutters and drains so water can flow away. If you're prone to flooding, look into things like sandbags or maybe even sump pumps or backflow valves. And crucially, check your insurance now. Does your homeowner's policy cover wind damage? Almost none cover flood damage. You need separate flood insurance. Remember, there's usually a 30-day waiting period for flood insurance to take effect.
Don't wait until the storm's in the Gulf to call your insurance agent about flood coverage. Got it.
Okay, what about during the storm and immediately after?
During the storm itself, stay inside, away from windows and doors. Even if it seems calm in the eye, the other side will hit hard. After the storm, wait for officials to say it's safe to go out or return if you evacuated. There are so many hidden dangers. And Ready.gov has a critical warning about generators. Never, ever use a generator, camp stove, charcoal grill, or any gasoline-burning engine inside your home, garage, basement, or even a partially enclosed area. Carbon monoxide poisoning. It's silent and deadly.
Absolutely lethal. Keep generators outside at least 20 feet away from doors, windows, and vents. Get carbon monoxide detectors with battery backup for inside your home. Also, avoid floodwaters. Don't walk or drive through them. You can't see downed power lines, debris, washouts, or contamination. Don't enter damaged buildings until they're declared safe. Wear protective gear, gloves, sturdy shoes, maybe masks during cleanup, and be really careful about food and water safety. When in doubt, throw it out. Clean and disinfect everything that got wet to prevent mold.
Okay, so wrapping this up, the 2025 Atlantic hurricane season looks like it could be busy, above average, with a higher than normal chance of major storms hitting the U.S. and Caribbean.
Right. The climate signals are pointing that way. But the real message, the constant message from all these reliable sources, is that the overall forecast doesn't change the fundamental need for your preparation.
Because, like CSU said, it only takes one storm. Understanding the forecast is good. It motivates you, hopefully. But it's the planning, the supplies, securing your home, knowing the safety rules before a storm forms, that's what actually makes a difference.
Exactly. Being prepared isn't just about reacting to a specific forecast. It's about building resilience for your family, regardless of the numbers. Taking steps now, whether it's making that communication plan or looking into reliable backup power, gives you more control in an uncertain situation.
It's really an investment in safety and peace of mind. Maybe think about it this way. As you prepare for this hurricane season, how does that process also make you more ready for other unexpected disruptions, whatever they might be? What does resilience really mean for you and your community in the long run? To learn more about reliable generators and emergency preparedness, you can visit auroragenerators.com.